He's your voice of reason in the medical world. Dr. Fred Brown from Griffin Health talks to Melissa in the morning. Now on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
So as you know, February is National Heart Month, and I think this is a pretty cool story. Shout out to the dads out there. I should say the involved fathers out there. A new study shows the father may have more impact on the heart health of their young children than even the moms. Oh, man, the timing of this, Dr. Brown, because I can tell you right now, this is the time frame where my husband is driving Chase to school, listening to the show, and he's probably turning up the radio right now. Did you see this study?
I did. It's really interesting.
Why are you laughing? You're like, oh, Derek's going to have a great day, and you are not. Why? What did you think of this study?
You know what? It's a very interesting study. I mean, I'm not sure sort of the data on it.
Okay.
You know,
so I still matter. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, okay, you still matter. You still matter a lot.
Okay. You're like, sorry, Derek, but we still need Melissa. Yeah, it said the findings by researchers from Pennsylvania State University were published in the journal Health Psychology, and it looked at interactions infants have with their dads and their moms. It found fathers who were less attentive to their 10-month-olds resulted in those children having poor heart health by age 7, including inflammation and high blood sugar. Why would that even be, Dr. Brown?
You know what? It's actually very interesting because I think it has to do with just, and again, I think it's important that this, you know, that we document that this is sort of from psychology magazines. So this is a psychology journal. So again, I think this is really looking at, you know,
feelings
how are
these over science. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. And I think it's really important to know through evolution that we are social creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And the more that
True.
We interact with our parents, the better. And that means having a male and female influence. So I'm not surprised. I would actually, it would be interesting if it sort of ran the other way also. I know it's sort of designed for this aspect, but it would be interesting to see, well, if there isn't a attentive mother, is there the same sort of issue that could occur?
That's true. Right. Well, because I think maybe you just expect that moms are going to be involved because we're the ones who created them. Right. So it's like in some regard, you know, we have to be involved. It's not like we can kind of like park it and move away like they're literally growing inside our bodies. So maybe that's why they didn't. But I think there also has been, quite frankly, such a national attention on dads being involved just like in the household. So maybe that's what prompted this. I don't know.
Exactly. And I think when you look at sort of all the data that's coming out, the importance of social interaction is so enormous. That it's really important that it's, you know, that there is a good network of, you know, there's a network including starting with the parents, but then having a network of, you know, friends and family to really be part of a community to help raise a child, which is kind of interesting because you hear about that cliche, you know, it takes a community, but it really is true in our development to have those interactions with other people.
Yeah, I think that's so true. So, I mean, I guess the big takeaway here, Dr. Brown, if I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but is just the early, just the attentiveness, regardless of the parent, early on is going to. But I still don't get, though, how that has a direct impact on your heart health. I mean, when you're talking about having lower blood sugar and inflammation.
You know what? It's interesting because we could probably, and again, and this is, you know, theorizing, and we could probably do further studies. We being, you know, the health community can make third. It's probably related to cortisol.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Because that is actually, that was what you'd exactly expect to see with someone who has cortisol. So increased levels of cortisol would lead to cardiac issues, would lead to increased stress, which would mess with the blood sugars, et cetera.
Got it. So just pay attention to your kids and actually like engage and love them. Is that what you're saying?
Pretty much,
what you want us to do, Dr. Brown? Parenting advice, just care.
Very Valentine-ish, yes.
I love it, right? Well, listen, 'tis the season, definitely. So we've got Dr. Brown here. A couple of other stories that came across my news desk in the health sector. The World Health Organization saying over a third of all cancer cases worldwide could be prevented. Now, I think this is significant, certainly, because you don't want to overblow it and think, you know, hey, we could have avoided this. So I want to say kind of logically, when I first heard about this study, I thought, yeah, sure, maybe like skin cancer, for example, if you just kind of stay out of the sun, or, you know, lung cancer if you don't smoke cigarettes, right? So I wasn't too shocked by this. But according to this new study, it looked at 9 cancer-causing infections and dozens of preventable causes, including air pollution, ultraviolet radiation, as we talked about, and physical inactivity as being reasons for developing cancer. That was what was surprising to me.
Right. And you know what? It is interesting because, yeah, I mean, it is definitely a headline, right? That's a grabber, a page turner to say, you know,
right,
they are preventable. I mean, listen, there's even if you were to I don't even know if that's actually possible to eliminate absolutely everything,
right,
to prevent someone from having a cancer. That's just there is a genetic component to cancers. So we just sort of need to always keep that sort of in mind. However, that being said, I think their point being is that if you avoid, and again, I think these are more realistic than me, but 30 to 50% of cancers, I think, are very reasonable to say they're preventable by, you know, not smoking, reduction, if not elimination, of alcohol, unhealthy diets, which we talked a lot about, the highly processed foods. And the one that people forget about, and the one that we need to just sort of keep in the back of the mind, is actually infections. And we've talked a lot about vaccines.
But that's what I think got me the most, Dr. Brown, was the infections. Because I don't think the average person, again, I can't speak for the population of the world, but I can tell you for me, when I hear about things that can cause cancer, like I said, sun, smoking, inactivity, your diet, I get it. But infections, no. I never correlate those two together.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is really a big component of it. In fact, viral infections are huge. So the two that we've actually talked about here is the hepatitis B. So if you contract hepatitis B, the likelihood of you getting liver cancer is substantially higher. And human papillomavirus, HPV. Those are the two big ones that can lead to significant disease and cancer.
Interesting.
And there's vaccines against them, and we just took away the hepatitis B.
Right, and that was you were panicking about that a few weeks ago, right? Got
I was,
it. Yep,
yeah.
Yep. Now I'm caught up.
And this is a great point to say that, you know, this is a preventable cancer, and we're not doing it. And then HPV, we're actually reducing the doses. So I think that's really important to know. But there are other viruses that can cause cancers. Interesting enough, I mean, sort of the most obvious one in my world is HIV. You can contract an infection, and that increases the likelihood of developing head and neck cancer as well as lymphomas.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And before we had treatment for HIV, the leading, one of the leading diagnoses was a cancer, Kaposi sarcoma, which is that red rash on the skin.
I did not know that.
And it's actually interesting now, HIV in itself has taught us a lot in the aspect that if we don't have an immune system, we are now more susceptible to viral infections.
Mm-hmm.
If we're more susceptible to viral infections, then we can develop cancer secondary to viral infections, including things like, again, Kaposi's virus, which actually leads to Kaposi sarcoma. Lymphomas and head and neck cancers are associated with Epstein-Barr virus, something that's really common that we have. But if we don't have an immune system, then we are at a higher risk of developing these cancers.
I've never even heard of whatever you just said.
Oh, sorry.
No, what did you just say?
Epstein-Barr. Epstein-Barr virus is mono.
Wow. Mono can lead to cancer? If you're not vaccinated or if you don't have an immune system.
The virus that causes mono is Epstein-Barr virus, and Epstein-Barr virus can cause cancer.
If you have a bad immune system.
If you have a bad immune system.
But then, Dr. Brown, oh man, now you're going to lead me down a rabbit hole. Wait a minute.
I opened a can of worms.
Well, because Dr. Brown, what I'm going to ask you, which is that if we don't have an immune system, being more susceptible to that, so then wouldn't that lead to, and again, I'm not saying that we should, be eliminating the vaccines that have already been recommended and things like that, but there's always that, are we doing a disservice to our kids because we vaccinate them, and we don't really give their immune systems a chance to fight back. Now, that's not to say that all the vaccines that they're required to have when they're babies are not important, but that is a question. Like when we looked at the COVID vaccine for kids or even the flu vaccine for kids, and if that impacts their immune systems.
Right. So it's interesting because I see where you're going. I would actually say the opposite way. So when we give a vaccine, we're exposing the immune system to an organism. So we are essentially activating the immune system. So this is actually kind of a common understanding. Well, if you give them these vaccines, then they're never going to see them. Well, actually, we are. That's exactly what you're doing. Is you're exposing the child to, again, depending on what the vaccine is. But let's say with the flu vaccine, you're exposing them to proteins. Those proteins are expressed to our immune system, and then our immune system in turn is activating, and we're sort of waking it up. In my mind, it's more like we're exercising our immune system when we give vaccines. We're not actually preventing it from working. Now, what we are doing is that we are actually getting our immune system, children's immune systems, sort of ready to go, and preventing them from getting long-term complications from things like hepatitis B and HPV.
So you'd rather them get the flu vaccine, for example, than to eat dirt in the backyard?
Yes.
Got it. Okay.
It's a little more specific.
Okay. Got it. Listen,
if you give the flu vaccine, you know you're getting a protein that's actually going to be, and there's going to be some level of memory that the body's going to have about seeing this virus. If you eat dirt, sure. I mean, I would not recommend it for other reasons, but that exposure is also important because when we talk about the amount of viruses that we see, like yearly, it's insane the amount of number of viruses that we come across, and to say that we're not going to have any exposure to those viruses, you know, or we're going to have less exposure because we've been vaccinated doesn't work that way. It doesn't work statistically. So if you think about how many viruses, think about how many times you've been infected in your life, you know, with a cold or a cough or a GI bug or you name it.
Yeah.
A lot, right?
Yes.
Every time you've done that, you've actually developed some sort of immunity to that. But then there's just so many that's there that it doesn't make a lot of sense. But the bad ones, you already got the vaccine for, and you got the assuming.
I'm assuming. You know, if I've taught you anything, Melissa.
Or I got the vaccine for this, but you know what? So I'm actually happy that I'm not going to get the measles, you know?
Right. And yes, I did. I did get the vaccine for the measles. Yes, I did. That's fair. You know me well enough, Dr. Brown.
I did know that, but listen, yeah. I don't want to. You
know, no, that's fine. I that's why I kind of go to the Cliff Notes version, because, man, if I could talk to you about this for hours, I would. But that is always sort of the age-old question is, you know, why don't I just let my kids, you know, drink out of the hose or eat dirt versus getting the vaccines. So I think you answered that.
And I think the important thing is that we just talked about is, you know, that connection with other humans does another thing. It actually does allow us to have, you know, does allow us to have the ability to develop resistance to viruses in particular.
Interesting. Huh. Interesting. Okay, Dr. Brown, a few more minutes, but I had a question about this other study. It reveals important new findings about kidney stones, which result in 500,000 emergency room visits a year in the U.S. I can tell you that my mom and my brother are part of that. Researchers at UCLA discovered bacteria hiding in, I don't want to mess this up, calcium oxalate. Oh, look at me. I'm a doctor all of a sudden. Kidney stones, the most common type. And they're linking that to why you see, you know, more and more people struggling with this, I guess, or I don't know if you could comment on this.
Absolutely. So, yeah, kidney stones are in the medical term we call nephrolithiasis. So stones in the kidneys.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, there are a lot of different crystals that can form in the kidneys. This happens to be one of the most common ones, which is the oxalate crystals.
Yes.
So calcium oxalate crystals, and there's diets and whatnot. But yes, they found that there is bacteria that is intertwined within it. I just want to be really careful about this. It does not necessarily mean that you need to go on antibiotics if you have, if you to prevent getting kidney stones. I think that goes to our sort of our next step is what do we need to figure out what will prevent this from happening?
Well, they do think it could lead to treatments though.
Yes,
maybe not preventing
absolutely.
It, but like treatments, which I think that's a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important that we talk a little bit about sort of antibiotics, Because you don't want family members to be on antibiotics all the time.
Right.
Because that's actually really bad too, because antibiotics aren't really designed like that. So remember, bacteria are living organisms, and living organisms can change, mutate, and be different. So if they develop resistance to the antibiotic, what then happens is now you have stones, and now you have absolutely no reason to treat the stones if that turns to be the way we're going to do it, or the infections that can occur because of stones. So what more commonly happens, or what can happen with people who have kidney stones, is it can block the drainage of urine from the kidneys, and that urine can get infected with other bacteria, not these bacteria, and can lead to pretty significant infections. So we have to treat those. Those actually can be pretty significant. So we need to find out a mechanism in which we can reduce the bacterial load without necessarily going to antibiotics.
So it seems like almost beginning stages kind of a study.
Yes, correct.
I mean, if it could lead to maybe some new treatment strategies, that would be amazing. Do we still think kidney stones are really connected to, you know, hereditary or certain, you know, like I know type 2 diabetes is one.
We do. Absolutely.
We do. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's definitely
a genetic component related to it. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of other factors. There is definitely a dietary relation to it also.
So you say if you don't drink enough water?
Definitely an issue.
It's definitely an issue. Okay. Well, we'll keep an eye on it. I just wanted to get your take on it because, you know.
Absolutely.
I see something, I'm like, Dr. Brown.
Well, it's interesting because what we're finding is that there's other ways that we can prevent bacterial overgrowth, bacterial infections. We've actually found that bacteria can even be associated with certain types of cardiac disease. So it's very interesting that infectious disease, and obviously, you know, I'm an infectious disease doc, so these are the headlines that I'm going to look at. But, you know, we do know that there's a lot. The question is that how do we prevent those bad bacteria from causing problems? And the answer is we don't have quite an answer yet. All we know is how to treat an acute infection.
Okay, so to be continued. Dr. Brown, I always appreciate you. Thank you so much, and we'll talk again next week.
My pleasure.
All right, that's Dr. Fred Brown of Griffin Health right here on WICC, our voice of reason in the medical field.